delivered by Venerable Usilananda at the Tathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California. Special retreat of November 1998.
I will tell you about a man named Nakulapita and the advice given to him by the Buddha regarding pain. We will also meet Venerable Sariputta in this discourse as he gave a further exposition of the advice given by the Buddha. Now, there was a couple in a city called Crocodile's Voice. It is said that when that city was founded, a crocodile made a noise. So that city was called Crocodile Noise. So in that city, there was a couple, and their names were Nakulapita and Nakulamata. Now, Nakulapita means father of Nakula, and Nakulamata means mother of Nakula. So, although the commentary did not say anything about the son, they seemed to have a son called Nakula. Married when they were young, and they were devoted to each other. First visited their city. See, they went to the to see the Buddha along with the other inhabitants of the city. Now, as soon as they saw the Buddha, they thought that Buddha was their son. So they said, "Oh, my son, where have you been all these years? You did not support us," and so on. So when they were saying all these, Buddha did not say anything to them. Buddha did not tell them to stop. Buddha just let them to talk as they like, because they were so happy when they saw the Buddha, and so when their happiness was great, it was difficult to take the Dharma. So Buddha just let them talk as they liked, and when they calmed down, the Buddha taught them a discourse, and at the end of the discourse, both of them became Sotapannas. The commentary explained why they got the notion that Buddha was their son. They had been the mother and father of the Buddha or the Bodhisattva for 500 lives and consecutive lives in the past, and also they had been the Buddha's uncle and aunt for 500 more lives, and then how do you call the younger brother of a father? Same uncle. Then elder brother of a father? So they had been the younger elder brother and elder sister of Buddha's father and mother. And also, again, for 500 consecutive lives, they had been Buddha's, I mean, the younger brother and younger sister of the Buddha's father and mother. So for 150 lives, so they had been Buddha's very close relatives. So that attachment was carried over, say, to the present life. And so when they saw the Buddha, they just thought that Buddha was their son. or they have found their long-lost son. Sometimes you meet a person whom you have not met before, but as soon as you see that person, you think that you have seen that person, or very familiar with him or with her, or you like him or you like her. So that happens to many people. And I think that is because they had been together in the past. They may have been close relatives in the past. And so the attachment they had during their past lives was carried over to the present life. And so when, as soon as they saw each other, then they like each other, they are attracted to each other. Became Sotapannas, Buddha went on his journey to other places. And then it seemed that Buddha visited that place two or three times. And so every time Buddha went to their city, they went to the Buddha and talked with the Buddha and so on. So once Buddha visited that city, maybe years later, because at that time Nakulapita was an old man. So in this discourse, we find only Nakulapita, not his wife. His wife was not mentioned in this sutta, but in other suttas, the two were always mentioned together. So this time when Buddha visited the city of Crocodile Voice, Nakulapita went to see the Buddha. And when after he had paid respects to the Buddha, he said, "Bhante, I am now an old man. I have reached the third portion of my life." So maybe he was about 70 or 80 at that time. And he said, "I am always sick. And I get the chance to see you or your disciples who please me just once in a while. So now please give me some advice. Please give me some Dhamma talk." that would be good for me for a long time. Then the Buddha said, "It is true that this body is, that means this, your body is sick. Your body is like an egg, fragile, and your body is just covered with thin skin. So that means you are vulnerable." So a person who is holding such a body, if that person thinks that he is healthy, it would be very foolish of him. So that means we have this physical body, although we think we are healthy, still there are many impurities oozing out of our body through the orifices, and so the body is said to be sick. And to say that I am healthy is just foolishness. So Buddha said, for one carrying this body, to claim just for even for a moment's health would be sheer foolishness. And then Buddha said, you should train yourself thus. Though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. So this is the advice given to Nakula by the Buddha. is sick. Good piece of advice, and I think we should all memorize this and say it every day. Though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. Kulabida heard this advice. He was very glad. So, after hearing this, he paid respects to the Buddha and left him. And he went to the Venerable Sariputta. So when the Venerable Sariputta saw him, then Sariputta said, you look calm, and your complexion is clear and pure. Surely you must have some Dhamma talk from the Buddha. Then Nakulabhida said, how could be otherwise, Venerable Sir? I have just been sprinkled by ambrosia. I have just been sprinkled by the nectar of the Dhamma talk by the Exalted One. So he was very happy, and he reported this to the Venerable Sariputta. Then the Venerable Sariputta asked, how was it? What was the talk that you had from the Buddha? And so Nakulabhida reported the conversation that occurred between him and the Buddha. So what he said to the Buddha and what the Buddha said to him. And Nakulabhida reported his conversation with the Buddha. The Venerable Sariputta said, did not it occur to you to question Father, the Buddha, how far is body sick and mind sick, and how far is body sick and mind not sick? Now Nakulabhida did not ask about this because he was so pleased with the advice that maybe he forgot to ask the Buddha to explain any further. So when Sariputta asked him, did you ask the Buddha about this? He said, I would have traveled a long distance to learn from you or to learn from the Venerable Sariputta the meaning of this saying of the Buddha. So let the explanation of this saying be the responsibility of the Venerable Sariputta. So my responsibility is to listen to you. So please explain it to me, he said. So Venerable Sariputta said, then listen, pay good attention, and I will speak. And he explained to him about the body sick and mind sick, and the body sick and mind not sick, with reference to two kinds of persons. One who has the wrong view of personality, or wrong view about the existing aggregate, and the person who has no such wrong view. Advice: though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. Now, whenever we have pain, we always want to get rid of it. And we are depressed, we are angry, we may be crying, we may be grieved. So this is what most people do when they feel pain or when they are sick. But here Buddha said, you must train in this way, though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. So although you may be suffering bodily, do not let your mind suffer. So this is the advice given by the Buddha. But Buddha did not explain to him how to what to do so that only the body is in pain and not the mind. And by letting our mind become sick, we are actually making our condition worse. So first there is the sickness of pain in the body, and that is difficult to endure, that is one suffering. And then we are sorry about that pain, or we are grieved, we are depressed, and so there is another suffering for us. Now, Buddha once described such a person as a person who has been pierced by two thorns. First, there is a thorn in his flesh, and then in order to take out that flesh, he put another thorn in the flesh, and so he suffered twice. So in the same way, when we let our mind be sick, we are letting another thorn into our flesh. So the Buddha's advice is, though the body is sick, your mind should not be sick. So what to do so that our minds are not sick, although the body is sick? You all know what to do. Practice, right. Practice mindfulness. The mind to be sick means the mind is associated with mental defilements. So when there is pain or sickness in the body, then the mental states that arise in our mind are sorrow or anger or ill will. And so letting our mind be contaminated with mental defilement is what we call letting our mind suffer, or letting our mind be sick. Following the advice of the Buddha, following the practice of foundations of mindfulness, we can keep our mind from being invaded by these mental defilements. What we do when there is, say, pain in our body, so we concentrate on that pain and be mindful of it, or make mental notes as pain, pain, pain. So in the beginning there may be a little mental suffering, but as we get concentration, then we are able to watch the pain, and so we can avoid the anger and other, the depression, anger and other mental defilements from entering our minds. So when there is pain, we try to watch it, we try to be mindful of it, so that we are able to avoid mental defilements from arising in our minds. And when mental defilements do not arise in our minds, our minds become calm and concentrated. So when mind is concentrated and calm, then we are able to live with that pain. So that pain may not disappear, but we are able to live with it, or to accept it, to make notes of it, not let it not let it torment our minds. Now, when there is pain in the body, the tendency is to do something to get rid of it. So we have the desire to get rid of it. And we make notes of the pain, or we try to be mindful of pain. But actually, to be mindful of the pain in this case is not to get rid of it, but to understand it fully. So that is a point we have to understand. If we make notes of pain with the hope of getting rid of it, and when it does not go away, we'll become frustrated. So we'll become more pierced by the thorn, and so our mind will become sick. In another sutta, Buddha said, "Monks, there are three kinds of feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And it is for the full understanding of these feelings that four foundations of mindfulness should be practiced." So according to that teaching, practicing the foundations of mindfulness on the feeling is not to get rid of it, not for it to go away, but to understand it fully. Understanding involves three things: understanding the individual characteristic of feeling, understanding the general characteristic of feeling, and abandoning some wrong perceptions or some wrong notions regarding the feelings. So these three things are called full understanding. When you watch, let's say, the pain, and make notes as pain, 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 you come to see that it is an experience of an unpleasant sensation in the body. So that experience of unpleasant sensations in the body is the characteristic of unpleasant feeling. Now, please understand that feeling is mental. When we say feeling, we mean the mental state or mental factor that is called vedana in Pali. So when we say feeling, we mean mental state in the mind. And with that mental state, we experience the sensation in the body. So what we call pain is a physical thing in the body, material properties, say, that go wrong. So when they are all right, we do not feel anything. We do not feel pain. But something went wrong, and so there is pain in let's say in the body, and we feel that, or we experience that pain with our mind. And when we experience that pain with our mind, there arises in our mind what is called feeling or vedana. And when we watch pain, actually we watch that feeling, that experience of the pain in the body, of the unpleasant sensations in the body is the individual characteristic of unpleasant feeling. What is unpleasant feeling? So unpleasant feeling is the experience of the unpleasant sensations in the body. So when you watch pain and you say pain or paining, 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 you get this understanding that And the unpleasant feeling is actually the experience of the unpleasant or undesirable sensations in the body. Its function, and that is, it depresses your mind. So when there is pain, you are depressed. So depressing the mind is its function. That also you may see when you watch the pain. And when you, if you go on watching the pain, making notes as pain, 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 or paining, 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 you will come to see that what you thought to be one solid, continuous pain is not really not solid and not continuous. Just one pain arises, and you are aware of that pain, or you make note of that pain, and then that pain disappears, and then noting disappears, and then there is another pain. And so there is another noting or mindfulness, and then there is another pain, and so on. So you see that pain is not one solid thing, and pain does not last for a long time. Pain arises and disappears, and then another pain arises, disappears, and another pain arises and disappears. So you see that pain arises and disappears, and so pain is impermanent. So when you see that pain is an impermanent thing, then you see the general characteristic of that pain. General characteristic means a characteristic common to all conditioned phenomena. So when you see that pain also arises and disappears, comes and goes, and so it is impermanent, you also see that pain itself is dukkha. Pain itself is oppressed by arising and disappearing. And you also see that you have no control over it. It comes and it goes by itself. And so there is the characteristic of non-atta there. Non-atta means not atta, and also having no control over it. So you see the three characteristics: the impermanence, suffering or unsatisfactoriness, and non-soul nature of things. When you pay close attention to pain in this case, when you see the pain as impermanent, suffering and no soul, and you are able to discard the wrong notion that pain is permanent, or pain lasts for a long time. So when you are able to see the general or common characteristics of pain, you are able to live with it. You do not feel any ill will, you do not feel any sorrow, or you do not feel any depression regarding that pain. So although pain may still be there, you can accept it, you can live with it. That means you can keep your mind free from mental defilement such as anger. Buddha said that with regard to pleasant feeling, the inclination to greed should be abandoned. With regard to unpleasant feeling, the inclination to anger should be abandoned. And with regard to neutral feeling, the inclination to ignorance should be abandoned. Now, when you pay just close attention to the pain, or you make notes of the pain and you see pain as impermanent, you are able to prevent anger from arising regarding that pain. And so that is, you are abandoning anger regarding that pain. So if you see pain in this way, if you see the individual characteristic, common characteristic, And if you are able to avoid anger regarding that pain, you are said to understand the pain fully. So for that full understanding, see, we practice mindfulness on pain. Of course, pleasant feeling and neutral feeling also should be observed. But here in this sutta, since Nakulabhita said he was always sick, Buddha talked about only the painful feeling or about pain. So with regard to pain, when it arises, we just try to be mindful of it, or we just try to live with it. And when we try to be mindful of it, our intention is not for pain to go away or not to get rid of it, but to fully understand it, able to watch it and see the characteristics, then you will no longer be bothered by that painful feeling. Although the pain does not disappear, you find that you can live with it, you can stay with it, and you will find that actually pain is a good object of meditation. When you have pain, your mind is pulled towards pain, and so there is very little opportunity for distractions. Be patient with it. Do not move, but just try to be mindful of it as long as you can. Only when it becomes really too much for you, only when you honestly think that you cannot bear it any longer, can you make movements to ease pain. But until then, please be patient and try to be mindful of it or make mental notes of it. Only when you patiently make notes of pain can you get concentration. So once you get concentration, then you will find that pain doesn't bother you as it did before. So next time we have pain, we will remember this advice of the Buddha: though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick, and then apply mindfulness to pain. Go to the explanation given by the Venerable Sariputta. Now the Venerable Sariputta said, an untaught person who has not heard much about the teachings, who has not read much about the teachings, and who does not associate with good friends. So such a person takes this body, or takes takes matter as self. Or he may regard the self as having, let me use the word rupa in Pali. So rupa is not just the body. Rupa is material properties. So such a person who is not trained, who is not familiar with the teachings of the noble ones, regards regard the rupa as self. Now that is one way of regarding. Or he may regard the self as having rupa. Or he may regard rupa as being in self. Or he may regard the self as being in rupa. Now there are four kinds of wrong views about, say, the first aggregate. Rupa is atta, and that is one thing. And then atta has rupa, second thing. And then rupa is in atta. And the fourth is the atta is in rupa. So there are different kinds of wrong views about rupa and atta. When a person regards rupa as self, that means he sees rupa and self, or rupa and atta, as one and the same thing. So just like he sees the flame and the color of the flame as just one, so he also sees the rupa and atta as just one. So the first wrong understanding is rupa is atta, like the flame and its color. Wrong view is atta has rupa, like a tree having a shadow. So here, atta and rupa are different. In the first, atta and rupa are the same. Now he takes atta and rupa as different, and the atta as having the rupa, like a tree having a shadow. Or he may take atta as some receptacle or some vessel, and rupa as something in the vessel. So in this case, he is taking atta and rupa as different, but rupa, he sees rupa in atta, like he sees smell in a flower. He may also think that atta and rupa are different, but this time he sees atta residing in the rupa. So seeing a gem, like seeing a gem in a casket, in a box. Different ways people see or regard atta and rupa. So the first is atta and rupa are the same, and the other three are atta and rupa are different. But the second is atta having the rupa, and the third is rupa in atta, and the fourth is atta in rupa. So they see in different ways. That I am the rupa, or rupa is mine. So he is possessed by this idea, or he takes that I am the rupa, or rupa is mine. As he is possessed by this idea, his body alters and changes. So due to the body altering and changing, sorrow, grief, and other mental defilements arise in his mind. That means, although he thinks that he is the rupa, or rupa is his property, that means he can have control over it, possessed by such thought, his body may change. And change means change for the worse. So when his body changes, he is sorrowful, because formerly he thought that the body would not change, it would last forever. And now, in spite of his wish, in spite of his idea that I am rupa, or rupa is mine, the body is changing, and so he comes to grief. He may have the same views about the other aggregates also. Feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. Why I am the feeling, I am the perception, I am the mental formation, I am the consciousness, all the consciousness is mine. His consciousness may change. And when the consciousness changes, he comes to grief. So this way, a person who is not well informed and who does not associate with knowledgeable persons or noble ones, let his mind be sick when his body becomes sick. So that means a person who has not got rid of what is called the Sakkaya Ditti, wrong view regarding the existing aggregates. So a person who has not got rid of the Sakkaya Ditti comes to grief, say, when his body, his feeling and so on changes. So it is how the body is sick and also the mind is sick. Now, for the person who lets his body only sick and not his mind, is a person who is well informed, who associates with noble persons, and who understand the teachings of the noble ones, and who does not have the same opinions about the five aggregates. So he does not think that rupa and atta are the same, or atta has rupa, or rupa is in atta, or atta is in rupa. So he has no such wrong views, and so he does not take that I am the rupa or rupa is mine. While he has no such opinions, his body may change, his feelings and others may change, but although they change, he does not experience any grief, any sorrow or any despair, because he has no wrong view regarding the five aggregates, or he has no Sakkaya Ditti regarding the five aggregates. So such a person is a one whose body only is sick, and who does not let his mind be sick. Now the wrong opinions taken by the first person are what are called 20 Sakkaya Dittis, 20 wrong views regarding the existing aggregate. There are 20 because there are 4 modes for each aggregate. For the rupa aggregate, there are 4 modes, and for the feeling aggregate also there are 4 modes, and so on. And so there are 20 of them, and they are called 20 Sakkaya Dittis. And the 20 Sakkaya Dittis can be eradicated only when you become a Sotapanna. So when a person becomes a Sotapanna, he eradicates the Sakkaya Ditti or any kind of wrong view and also doubts. So a Sotapanna is the one who does not let his mind suffer, although his body is suffering. But actually, it is only the Arhant who can do that perfectly, because Sotapanna still have some mental defilements remaining, Sakadagamis also remaining, Anagamis also, there are some mental defilements remaining. So the most perfect one who can follow that advice given by the Buddha is an arahant. We do to get rid of Sakkaya Ditti. Again, we practice Vipassana meditation. So by the practice of Vipassana meditation, we can understand fully the nature of feelings here in this order, the painful feelings. And when we understand these feelings fully, then we are able to keep ourselves from being, keep our minds from being tormented by the mental defilements, although our bodies may be suffering. So when we have pain or when we are sick, we will try to follow the advice given by the Buddha and not add an extra suffering onto the one that we have been suffering through the body. So by following that advice, that means by the practice of mindfulness meditation, we will be able to manage pain, we will be able to live with pain, and we will be able to keep ourselves from being our minds from being tormented by anger and other mental defilements when we have pain. Note is, we cannot run away from pain, or we cannot avoid pain, but we can avoid mental defilements that would arise from that pain, or that would arise depending on the pain. So it is possible to prevent mental defilements such as anger and depression by the practice of mindfulness or Vipassana meditation, although we are helpless against physical pain. Because since we have this physical body, there will always be pain. We will always experience pain. And not to speak of ourselves, even the Buddha still suffered bodily pain as long as he lived. To remember this Buddha's advice: though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. So we will say it many times a day, and especially when we have pain or when we are sick, we remember this saying and try to live according to this advice. Though my body is sick, my mind shall not be sick. Okay.